Welcome to On Spec, where you'll hear stories that bring you closer to the globe. I'm your host, Farih Banawa. In this season, we're taking you on a deep dive to discover how ordinary people are impacted by fake news. When the media covers disinformation, they tend to focus on election rigging or trolling on social media. We wanted to go way beyond that narrative by talking to real people on the ground. On Spec went to 7 countries to meet people on both sides of the information divide. The journalists met the truth tellers fighting back against disinformation, and they got to know people who absolutely agree with fake news to find out where their beliefs come from. Then they sat down the 2 people on opposing sides to talk to each other, face to face. Can they find common ground? For this episode, we go to Russia, a country that has become infamous for sowing disinformation abroad. But the Russians use those same sort of tactics at home, too often with far greater success. One of Russian state media's main targets is the LGBTQ community. In many cases, Russian media directly advocates hate against gay people. Journalist Theo Merz takes us to Moscow to figure out, what's it like to be gay in Russia?
I should be able to tell you what it's like to be gay in Russia, because I am gay and I am in Russia. But the fact is that I can't, and I never really know what to say when people ask me this. I think that's because there are 2 Russias. There's the Russia of my professional life, the country that I see as a journalist. It's a place where the LGBTQ community is attacked by vigilante groups, and gay people have to flee abroad because of concerns about their safety. It's a country where police arrest gay rights activists in the streets if they dare to protest.
Russian police detained as many as 30 gay rights activists who took part in an unsanctioned rally in St. Petersburg.
This is the Russia you might already have heard about, even if you haven't travelled here. It's a country where there's a lot of disinformation about gay people, spread by homophobic reports on state television that reach millions of Russians in their homes. And then there's the Russia of my personal life. That's a place not often seen in Western news reports about the country. In this world, my queer friends live openly. They go out to bars, they go to work, they fall in love, they fall out of love. They get their news from progressive online media and avoid Russian state television where they can. In a way, gay life in Moscow isn't that different from gay life in London or Paris, only here it's set against the backdrop of constant, state-sponsored homophobia. That means doors to gay clubs are unmarked, and you won't see any rainbow flags on the streets outside. But gay nightlife's everywhere, if you know where to look. This drag bar is just down the street from my flat in Moscow. The drag queen you can hear is dressed up as a grumpy Russian cleaning lady, and she's singing about her work. The bar's down a set of stairs in a basement, and there's no signage from the outside. It's on a street off Tverskaya Ulitsa, the main road in Moscow, that leads right down to Red Square and the Kremlin. From the outside, it looks as if the only thing down the stairs is a florist. So the bar's hidden, but it's still there. And it's far from the only place like it in the city. I'm not just talking about clubs, but also gay community spaces, LGBT film festivals, and sexual health services that cater to gay people. So, what's it like to be gay in Russia? Well, personally, in the morning, I might do an interview with a gay man who's fled the country after authorities threatened to take his children into care. And then in the evening, I'll go out for drinks with my gay friends and head out to a queer party in a club in central Moscow. In a way, I'm always travelling back and forth between 2 different Russias, the oppressive version you hear about in the news and this other, more tolerant Russia, where lots of people actually live. So how do these 2 very different countries coexist? What shapes them? And can they find any common ground? To understand how these countries think, you have to look at the kind of media that they're consuming.
Politik.
This is a video that was released just before Russia's last presidential election in 2018. It's in support of Vladimir Putin, and from a Western perspective, it's odd to say the least. There's this slightly pudgy, middle-aged man who says he's not planning on voting. Then he goes to sleep and wakes up in a nightmare future where Putin's no longer the president. In his nightmare, he's running around his apartment in a dressing gown. An army general comes to his door and tells him he has to enlist. And his son asks for some insane amount of money to pay for security at his school. And then he walks into the kitchen and sees this young guy sitting at the breakfast table, buffing his nails with a little rainbow-coloured file. I'm the gay you've taken in for adoption, the guy says. Then he throws his nail file down in a sulk. The man's wife looks at her husband and she says, what's wrong with you? It's the law in Russia now that every family has to take in a gay for adoption. We've still got a week left. If he doesn't find a boyfriend by then, you'll have to be in a relationship with him. The middle-aged man's looking around in horror and confusion. The law's the law, the gay guy says. Then he bites down suggestively on a banana. The video seems like a sitcom, and I have to admit that I laughed when I first saw it. But the message is serious, and it's clear. We're protecting you from the gays who pose a threat to our conservative, moral way of life. We are protecting you from the progressive West, where anything goes and where they support LGBT rights. Vote for us. This is a story about gay rights, but it's also about how Russia sees itself as a country. Conservative Russians, the majority, see their country as a place where so-called family values are more important than anything else, and there's no place for people who don't conform to strict gender norms. And the other, more liberal side, wants Russia to become a progressive European nation where difference isn't just tolerated, it's embraced. I wondered what would happen if I could find representatives of these two countries, these two Russias, and bring them together. I arranged to meet up with a young woman named Polina. She's a friend of a friend. We met on a grey morning at the end of autumn in Moscow. Polina's 22 years old and a university student who originally comes from the far north of Russia. I wanted to talk to her because she mainly gets her news from state media. She's conservative and she's a supporter of Vladimir Putin. She's obviously intelligent and well-read. She'd even brought along an iPad so she could quote from articles she'd seen about the LGBT community when we were talking. Like a lot of people I've spoken to in the country, Polina says she's not homophobic, but she has views that certainly would be considered homophobic in the West. She said she supports the way Russian state media talk about gay people.
This is their way of fighting. It's an ugly way of fighting, but it's what they do. I don't support it. They should be kinder. But there has to be some opposition. I don't want my child to grow up being told that being gay is the norm.
It is an ugly way of fighting. When the nightly broadcast comes on Russia's Channel 1, you can hear some offensive and sometimes just bizarre things about LGBT people. This is a news report about a rainbow-coloured ice cream that some suggested was out to change the sexual orientation of consumers. The ice cream makers even had to come out and defend themselves, saying they just like rainbows, after Putin himself got involved. But much more than the straight-up fake news about what's going on inside Russia, there's a constant drip of distorted news about LGBT rights in the West. And the way the state media here spins it, it's as if these Western ideas are on their way to invade Russia. It's as if gay rights have become so mainstream elsewhere that they dominate every aspect of public life and dictate what normal heterosexual people can and can't do. Recently, drag queens in New York did some story times for children at a few public libraries. In Russia, the story was blown up into a big controversy about how the powerful gay lobby is brainwashing American kids, and Russian kids might be next. State media has a baseline of homophobia all the time, but it really ramps this up when there's an election or when there's a political crisis in Russia, like anti-Kremlin protests. That's because it gives people something to rally around or to fight against. In the West, we talk a lot about Russian interference. In the last few years, we've been bombarded with news about Russian disinformation.
US officials have warned that Russian interference remains an active threat for the 2020.
Russian influence in the UK is the new normal, according to a long-awaited.
Well, as it turns out, Russians feel the same. Polina, the student I spoke with earlier, really bought into this argument that Russia risks being undermined by Western ideas. The same way people in countries like the UK or the US might feel that Russia is using disinformation to meddle in their affairs, many Russians like Polina feel the West is doing exactly the same thing to their country. Polina said she thought propaganda from the West was shaping the global conversation around LGBT people. She even used that word, propaganda. I asked her what she meant when she said that. I think her response goes to the heart of this debate in Russia.
It's Western propaganda. Basically, the Iron Curtain fell, we opened up to the whole world, and people started teaching Russia how to live, teaching us what a progressive society is and what it means to live in one. It's more than films, it's more than TV shows. I watch Netflix, and it's just not possible for them to release a series where there isn't a homosexual couple, where there isn't a black character or a disabled character. You just can't do it.
Нельзя выпустить сериал, где не будет гомосексуальной пары, где не будет черного человека, где не будет инвалида. Ну нельзя. Тот же Netflix, я его смотрю.
I really wanted to know what Polina might say to someone from the other side, someone who believes in a different set of values. But first I needed to find a person who might be up for it, which isn't exactly an easy task here. So I met up with a Russian named Pyotr, who I know through a friend, to talk more about this. He's 33 and he works as a psychotherapist in Moscow. Originally, he's from a city called Irkutsk in Siberia. Pyotr jokes that he's a triple minority. He's got blue eyes, he's got red hair, and he's gay. His views are the opposite of Polina's. He's liberal, he doesn't support Putin, and he gets his news from progressive online outlets. Pyotr told me about coming out to his mum and how the way state media reports on gay people had complicated that.
My mom is from the same generation as our president, well, the same age as our entire political elite now. She's 70 years old, and many years ago, when I first told her I was gay, the first question she asked me was, what will the neighbors say? She was worried about how other people would take it, how it will be perceived. It's clear that behind this, there was fear on my behalf and what was going to happen. Was I really the same monster that they talk about in the media? Was I really the terrible person that they show there? When you see LGBT people in the media, it's always negative. The image is of a person who is promiscuous, who is always changing their sexual partners, who can never have a stable relationship and who can't love. And it's true that it creates a certain impression.
Стабильных отношений таких людей нету, что, в общем, они не могут любить.
The impression you get about LGBT people from Russian state media is of someone whose lifestyle is at odds with the traditional conservative values that Putin says he's defending. It's someone who can never have a family. It's a person who's morally bankrupt and just doesn't have a place in the Russia that state TV tells people they live in.
If you take your own feelings out of the equation and just listen to what the media says, then what you see are monsters. Creatures who are always looking for something without seeming to know what they want. And of course, that scares people. It's terrifying.
Видим какого-то монстра или каких-то монстров, и это, конечно, пугает и ужасает.
It's not just news reports that build up this impression. I'm from the UK, but I've been living in Russia for the last 3 years. When I speak with people here, I sometimes realize they have very homophobic views, even if we have similar opinions on other issues, like immigration or foreign affairs. So I guess you could say that over these 3 years, I've built up a bit of a tolerance for intolerance. I tend not to challenge opinions I find offensive here in the same way I absolutely would if I was still in the UK. I know this is a different context. I appreciate that I'm a foreigner. But sometimes I'm still shocked by what I see here. I speak Russian, but I'm not a native speaker. And sometimes I think, surely I must have misunderstood that. Surely that can't be what they actually said. I had one of those moments recently when I was walking along a street in central Moscow. I saw a bakery with a sign above the door that said, «Pidrasam vhod vospreshon», or «No faggots allowed». When I got home, I googled the shop and found it was part of a chain of stores that's run by a homophobic businessman named German Sterligov. The bakery was later fined by a Russian court for inciting hatred, but the fact that these signs were allowed to hang in Moscow without protests from passers-by tells you a lot about attitudes on the ground. This is an environment that makes hate crimes against gay people permissible, and these kind of attacks have increased in recent years. The most extreme example is the gay purges in the Autonomous Republic of Chechnya.
Horror stories from gay men and women inside Chechnya confronting a man.
Gay men were rounded up by security services, tortured, in some cases killed, or forced to flee the country.
They put bag on my head and she said that it's my last seconds.
There's even been anti-gay legislation, like the 2013 Gay Propaganda Law, which makes it illegal to promote, quote-unquote, non-traditional sexual relationships to minors.
Next, we turn to the growing criticism of anti-gay laws in Russia. They're generating protests around the world just as...
President Obama says he has no tolerance for Russia's recent decision to ban so-called gay propaganda. Russia's sports minister says...
This gay propaganda law effectively outlaws any type of LGBTQ campaigning in Russia. And it means that nobody can hold pride marches or mention homosexuality in schools. Gay marriage has never been legal in Russia. But in 2020, in the same referendum that gave Putin the right to rule until 2036, the country voted to redefine marriage as being between a man and a woman. This means that gay marriage can't be legalized unless the constitution is changed again.
Ты рад, что у тебя появятся мама и папа. А вот и папа.
Ну, привет.
Привет.
A video released ahead of the referendum this summer reminded me of the one that came out before Putin was re-elected in 2018. The one where the man has a nightmare that he has to take a gay into his house. This new video showed another nightmare future of Russia in which same-sex couples are allowed to adopt.
Где моя мама?
Так вот она, твоя новая мама.
Two men come to an orphanage to pick up a distressed small child. One of the men is in makeup and women's clothes.
Пойдем?
He pulls out a dress to put on his new son, to the horror of the orphanage staff. Pyotr and I both know gay people who've decided to leave Russia because of the environment that all this rhetoric has created. Pyotr himself doesn't have any plans to emigrate, but when he spoke to a couple of friends who had left the country, It helped him understand his own experiences as a gay man in Russia better.
They told me this interesting thing. They went abroad, and then after 6 months, they have noticed something was missing. There was something they had in Russia that they didn't have there, and they spent a long time trying to work out what it was. And eventually they realized there was no anxiety, constant anxiety. Constant anxiety. When you live in Russia and you walk around Moscow, you get used to this feeling of anxiety. You're always thinking, am I dressed right? Can people see something about me? You pass people who are laughing, and you're always thinking, maybe they are laughing at you. You're always walking along the street, and you see someone a bit drunk. You're thinking of a way to get around them, so you don't get involved in anything. You emigrate, and half a year later, you don't feel that anymore. It is as if you can breathe easier, like your lungs have opened up.
What? Что-то было, а сейчас вот этого нет. Вот очень долго пытались понять, чего. Я обнаружил.
Even though life might be easier abroad, Pyotr doesn't want to leave his home and his family. Why should he? There are a lot of queer activists who are staying to change things in Russia rather than go down the emigration route. Some of them are setting up their own media companies to combat the disinformation spread about gay people by the state. Among them is Sasha Kazantseva, the founder of Ozine, a popular online journal that celebrates LGBTQ life.
Hi.
Hi, Sasha. Are you okay to talk now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I called Sasha at her home in St. Petersburg.
Thank you so much for your suggestion.
And I asked her what made her want to set up the platform a couple of years ago.
So, why did you decide to create Ozine?
Mm-hmm. You know, when we started Ozine in 2018,
she said she wanted to fight back against the dominant media narrative that presents gay people and the idea of LGBTQ rights as a threat. Things haven't been easy, but they are changing.
There are some independent media who do talk.
Sasha pointed out that more and more people are getting their news from online sources rather than state-controlled TV, meaning they have access to different kinds of ideas.
I have a positive view here because, you know, now a lot of young people, a lot of young queer people, they see how it works in other countries. They, due to the internet, they can see that there are other countries where queer people's rights are respected. And they have another perspective.
I said at the start of this podcast that I wanted to bring together representatives of the two Russias. I wanted to see what kind of common ground they could find. There are plenty of virulent homophobes in Russia, and I could have set one of them up with Sasha and watched the sparks fly. My first thought was of Valentina Bobrova, a far-right, anti-LGBT campaigner. I met her a few months ago after she launched a campaign against a theatre company that had made a show about Russians who came out as gay.
Mama, я хочу сказать тебе одну очень важную вещь.
Valentina and her supporters tried to have the company charged for spreading gay propaganda. They broke into performances and they threw a stink bomb through the window of the theatre during another play. I know that Valentina absolutely supports the homophobia of the state media. If anything, she thinks it doesn't go far enough in its attacks on gay people. This is what she said when I gave her a call.
Я уверена, что наше мнение разделяет 90 с лишним процентов населения России.
I'm sure that our opinion is shared by more than 90% of the Russian population. The fact that LGBT people, as you call them, are viewed negatively, this is just the opinion of Russian people. It's not the government or the media that doesn't accept them. It's that such a way of life, this orientation, is considered shameful. It's impossible to change this public opinion that has been held for centuries.
Valentina and Sasha are obviously coming from completely different worlds. In a way, it would have made sense to bring them together. But I didn't want to do that for two reasons. One, because of concerns about safety. Anti-gay campaigners have attacked gay rights activists, either physically or with online campaigns of abuse. And secondly, because I'd heard these sort of interactions just turn into shouting matches so many times before in Russia, and I didn't really think it would be productive. I wanted to see if ordinary people from different sides of the information divide could find something to agree on. So instead I asked Piotr and Polina, the gay man and the young woman we heard from earlier, if they would be up for meeting. They said yes. I booked a meeting room in the centre of Moscow. Given that I didn't really know how this was going to play out, I didn't want to suggest doing this in someone's flat. Part of me thought that this could still blow up into a state media-style shouting match. Things were a little awkward at the start, with both of them replying to my questions rather than talking to each other directly. They were eyeing each other up from the other sides of the table. I started off by asking what Piotr and Polina thought of the campaign ad before the referendum on constitutional changes this summer, the one that showed a grotesque caricature of a gay couple coming to pick up a child from an orphanage. Piotr jumped in first.
I found the video pretty disgusting. For a while, I was even scared. I felt frightened and upset that things like that were being filmed at all. The fact that state media were doing anything like that, it was nuts. And then it changed. There were protests on social networks, there were people posting pictures of their families, happy families, and they were saying, yeah, actually, that is the kind of Russia we want in the future.
Then Polina spoke up about the video.
Well, I agree that perhaps it wasn't done in the best way. Maybe it wasn't presented in an accurate way. That's what provoked an extreme reaction, and it might have been possible to avoid this. But the main idea of the video, I rather agree with.
Polina said that the main idea of gay parents raising children really did bother her.
I believe that in such a family, a child can't have a well-rounded upbringing, because the family itself isn't well-rounded. The people with a negative opinion of the video were saying that, well, if the couple doesn't adopt the child, then it will remain in an orphanage. But that's not the case. I checked yesterday, and we have people lining up to adopt in different cities, people from traditional families, if we can describe them in that way. It's far from the case that children will just be left in orphanages if gay couples can't adopt them.
That's actually not true. The number of children in orphanages in Russia vastly exceeds the number of parents who say they would be willing to adopt. That's despite efforts from authorities. Piotr didn't pick Polina up on that. Instead, he wanted to talk about why she thought gay people shouldn't be able to raise children.
Well, what do we mean when we are talking about a well-rounded family? What does it mean for a child to grow up well-rounded or not well-rounded? Where is the data that shows that children who grow up in homosexual, same-sex, okay, non-traditional families aren't well-rounded?
The conversation continued in that vein for quite a long time, with the two each demanding proof to back up the other's claims. And it's the same kind of conversation between people all around the world who disagree on gay marriage and gay adoption. What's natural? Do men and women play unique and unchangeable roles when it comes to bringing up a child? Then Polina said the West was trying to influence how people all over the world think about LGBT rights, imposing its values on Russia, and telling Russians how they had to think.
We have to be tolerant, we have to be accepting, and we have to show this to everyone. But I believe tolerance works for both sides. These people shouldn't tell me what I have to think. I have my own opinions. I won't say to you, why are you like that? It's not right. I don't want you to be like that. Get out. I won't say that to anyone. But if, for example, you go out on the streets with a flag and start shouting and forcing me to agree with you, then that for me is not tolerant. This whole craze for tolerance, it seems to me that it's actually intolerant.
Piotr was calm. He didn't raise his voice or lean in to make his argument, but he wasn't buying it.
Okay, then you have to stop talking about marriage. When you are in a group of people, stop talking about your boyfriend or your husband, because that's imposing your way of life on me. You say don't go out with your flags, don't shout, but you are going out with your flags all the time. Every time you go out with a boyfriend and kiss or hug him in the street, there is a heterosexual pride in the country every day.
Полина went on to say that her point of view was the majority view, and it was founded on tradition, nature, physiology, and, I'm quoting here, Russian values that are handed down by birth from our ancestors. She said that history was being rewritten to introduce examples of homosexuality where there weren't any, to make it seem like the norm. Piotr argued the opposite, saying that in Russia, the media was distorting the past to make it seem like gay people didn't exist. He pointed to the example of the recent biopic of Elton John, which was edited when it came out in Russian cinemas so that it didn't show any gay sex scenes.
Elton John просто показал всем свою личную жизнь.
We're about an hour into the conversation by now, and as you can hear, things have started to warm up. There's no shouting. It quickly became clear that neither of them are that kind of person. But they're talking over each other now, and some of their disagreements were starting to come out. I asked Piotr if he could explain to Полина how he felt about the state media's coverage of gay people.
I have a lot of sadness because there is no progression. There doesn't seem to be a room for any development. There is no alternative. Everything is going in one direction, and the world is becoming very polarized. What Полина has been saying is very similar to the way our media reports on LGBT people. Of course, the state media is absolutely homophobic. And when the media begins to discuss this topic, it never focuses on humanity or human relationships. It always gets into whether this is natural or not. It starts talking about natural phenomena. Whenever these ideas of natural phenomena or religion are raised, it's very important to enter into a dialogue. But now with Полина, I understand that the dialogue is possible, that she is not claiming to have a monopoly on the truth. And yes, it's true that there are certain assumptions, there are certain convictions, but I think the fact that she's agreed to this dialogue is already an important step.
In general, I don't think of myself as homophobic. Homophobia, in my opinion, represents an extreme point of view, and extremes, in my opinion, are never good. That's what I feel strongly about. Not the people themselves. I don't say that all these gay people are bad. I don't say I don't like them or that I don't want to see them. I don't think they should be killed, as many people do think, unfortunately, in Russia. That's not right. It's natural that everyone has the right to exist and the right to their opinion. We shouldn't hate people.
Но в то же время я понимаю, о чём говорит Пётр в плане СМИ.
I do understand what Piotr is talking about in terms of the media. And perhaps to some extent, I agree that the topic should be presented in a different way. It's not correct and it's not tolerant, much as I dislike this word.
Толерантно, хотя не люблю это слово.
Полина said she understood how journalism worked. She had a rather cynical view of it. She apologized for what she was about to say, in case it offended me as a journalist. I wasn't offended, actually, I've heard much worse.
The task of journalists now isn't to enlighten, their task is to attract attention and to produce any kind of reaction, whether that's negative or positive. As long as there is a reaction of some kind, it's good.
Какой-то реакции, что это хорошо.
Polina's right. From watching Russian state media, you'd think of this as a war between two sides. In one corner, traditional, moral Russia, and on the other, the progressive, dissolute West. It's not a space where there's a lot of compromise, and there's plenty of disinformation to keep agreements going. I don't kid myself that Pyotr and Polina would ever be friends, or that they probably ever would have met outside of this artificial discussion. But I know they both appreciated meeting each other. Just as we were about to leave, they got into another argument about whether Putin should have changed the constitution. Clearly, they were on different sides of the debate. But I felt they had a certain respect for one another and a real desire to get their points of view across.
For me, it's very important that there are places where you can really communicate, understand each other, and have contact. There are points of tension. It's a complex conversation, especially when you are discussing concepts like norms, traditions, and rules.
I completely agree. When you look through another person's eyes, it helps you somehow try to understand his life and what this person needs. I'm not just talking about our conversation today. I mean this in general. Of course, disagreements remain. I have my own opinions, and they are not likely to change.
Personally, and perhaps I'm being optimistic here, I agree with Sasha Kazantseva, the editor of Azine, when she said that Russia will inevitably become less homophobic as fewer people get their news from state TV. But even if they don't, the conversation between Pyotr and Polina gave me some hope that these two Russias I talked about can come together and find even a small bit of common ground, if they really want to. For OnSpec, this is Theo Mertz in Moscow.
Thanks, Theo, and thank you all for listening. If you still want to know more about what it was like to do this story in Russia, we'll be doing a live discussion with Theo on Instagram, and you can ask him questions. So many generous and talented folks helped out with producing this episode. Levi Bridges, Elisa Resnick, and I edited. Levi produced and mixed this story. Thanks to Daria Shamanova as Polina, Alexei Babets as Pyotr, Alisa Vagian as Valentina. They volunteered their time to do voiceovers. It's March and Women's Month, so our next story will be in honor of women fighting against sexism and misogyny. We'll take you to Brazil inside one family's struggle where women have been debunking fake news about feminism. We want to hear your feedback on Apple Podcasts and would love it if you share this episode with your family and friends.